listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 217 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm good. I've developed a really bad habit after our last episode about Instagram because I'm slightly distracted by the fact that I'm doing an Instagram story about us recording right now.
See, but I just took a photo and figured that would be less distracting and I'd remember to push the record button.
Well, this way I figured I'd do it up front so I can just put my phone away and then be fully present from here on out.
What's the fun in that? Who wants to be present? Yeah, the last episode is getting rave reviews, Chris. Rave reviews.
Rave reviews. You were really selling it as our funniest episode, which which means we're really not funny, but it was entertaining.
That may be true. I didn't say it was the funniest thing you've ever heard in your life. I said it might be one of our funniest episodes.
No, I had a lot of fun recording that one. That was.
And also, when I posted that, people are probably thinking, oh, all the funny stuff's going to happen in the first 5 minutes. It was actually pretty deep into it, probably when we stopped caring, when it started getting funny. Right. But when I was editing it, there was multiple times where I burst out laughing. Just, I thought it was funny. I just find our interactions funny. So,
well, no, it also was a very long episode.
Yes. Maybe if we didn't talk so much at the beginning, we could get to the heart of the matter sooner, but... No, it was good. You know, what's funny is, you know, after we recorded it, there was a couple things I noticed that, you know, just some small minor details that I thought, oh, we should have hit on that or hit on this other thing. But one thing I did notice is the whole time we were recording the episode, you were talking about that paparazzi thing, and I saw you post that thing, and realized that my Instagram wasn't updated to the latest
version. Oh, yeah, you didn't even have a...
It unlocked some more features that I didn't have. So yeah, it's weird because in the App Store, it doesn't tell you, it just says bug fixes, like what's new in this version. So a lot of times I just skip those, but it had a whole bunch of new features. So they were lying to us, but yeah.
You got to take your own advice.
Yeah. Make sure your app is updated because some of those features might be missing. But yeah, it's been fun. Been talking to a lot of artists over Instagram. And if you follow me on Instagram, you can see I posted something. I was making fun of the way I make faces when I'm playing guitar, specifically lead stuff. And so
I saw that. I noticed you had a little. It wasn't quite as agonized as John Mayer face, but you had a pained guitar face. That just shows that you're into it. That's how you're selling it.
Yeah, you're selling it. Like, this is really hard. All right. Well, today we've got an interesting episode. It's sort of an episode inside of an episode. And what we have here is our live podcast taping from the 2018 DIY Musician Conference in Nashville that happened last month. And for whatever reason, the end of it got cut off. However, there's a lot of great chemistry and people in the room were there and it's just fun interaction with actual listeners. And I didn't want to not use it. So what is going to happen is through the magic of editing, at some point, completely unknown to you, the listener, Chris and I will continue on.
Completely unknown, except for when the audio gets really clear all of a sudden.
Yeah, really dry, all the reverb's gone, and there aren't people heckling us from the back. But it cut off like right when I completed a thought, and I'm like, oh, that'll be easy for us, and it was near the end. We'll be able to just finish it out, and it's lots of good content. And that way, it doesn't take away from the folks that were there being told that they were going to be a part of a live podcast, and it's just fun. So that's what's going to happen today, and that session was... called Successful Release Strategies in a Streaming World. So that's what's going to happen today. But also, so with all the news about Spotify and opening up direct artist submissions, I wanted to jump on the podcast and address that. at the top here. So figured, what the heck, we'll just make it an episode inside of an episode. So we'll discuss the Spotify thing. You'll hear the live taping that will magically morph into Chris and I finishing out the episode, and you'll never know it happened. And then we do have a call and an email that we'll get to. So it's just action-packed today. Special episode.
I heard you say action-packed, so I'm ready.
The extra bonus, though, Chris, is that the listeners will get to hear the theme song twice because...
Oh, fantastic. And in the live one, it's the full version.
I need to trim that down because it's long enough where people stop clapping and they're just staring at us awkwardly while the music plays. So
just play the one that's, starts most episodes now these days.
It's so short. It doesn't do the part where they can clap. I'll fix it. Someday I'll fix it. Anyway, so yeah, they'll hear that twice. But we're going to start off right now. Lots of news around Spotify and what they're doing. If you haven't heard, Spotify announced that they are doing a beta test with a handful of artists in the U.S. to take direct submissions for new music for free. And so, of course, people in the music business press like to get on their soapbox and say what this means and say a lot of things like, it's the death of CD Baby and all sorts of stuff like that. So we're here to kind of discuss, bring some levity to the conversation. And Chris, what was your first initial reaction when you heard the announcement?
Okay, so my first initial reaction is based on a thing that CD Baby has experienced a number of times where people want to partner with us or you know, it can happen under a number of circumstances, but they don't quite realize what volume is in terms of the number of artists that are about to be sent their way. And once we open up that channel and refer people to that partner or whatever, they're like, oh God, shut it down. There's too many. Because they don't know that it's not just we're sending a customer your way. We're also sending their customer service problems, their complaints. A few of them might even try to commit fraud. And so I kind of laughed to myself because I thought, okay, Spotify's taking direct submissions. First of all, it's in beta with a few hundred people. That's really different from dealing directly with millions and millions of artists around the world. Apple Music, I think, has tried this. Amazon's tried it. Google tried a version of it. They all shut it off because they don't want to deal with direct communications with millions of people. That was my first very kind of cynical, chuckle I had to myself. And once it expands, I mean, I guess Spotify has the benefit of not being, you know, they're purely a music company, whereas those other brands I mentioned do a lot of other stuff. So maybe Spotify is really invested in this thing fully. But I just thought, oh God, do they really know what they're doing?
Well, they've been working on this for a long time. We've actually known about it for over a year. So I think they're moving slowly with it. Yeah, 200 artists is about what we get here at CD Baby in a few hours. So that's not that many. And there was a couple initial thoughts I had. First was artists need to have their music everywhere. We talk about this on the podcast, that more so than ever, you've got to have your music everywhere, that the fan community is so fractured. In here, in the U.S., Apple Music is actually more popular than Spotify. It's actually been gaining tons of ground. I saw an article today that said it's like growing 2.5 times faster than Spotify in the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea that, you know, you can just go on one platform and be all set is just not the case, and not to your advantage if you want to make the most revenue from your music and monetize your music as much as possible. So that was my first thought, is that hey, you need your music everywhere. There's places in other territories around the world that you don't even realize exist that will have your music. And going to all these places directly yourself just isn't possible, and even not the best use of your time. The other thing that, you know, popped into my mind is that 2 years ago, every artist was the main thing was every artist was complaining that Spotify doesn't pay enough in royalties. And my thought was, man, if they strip all these artists away from distributors, the artists themselves will have zero power in negotiating better royalty rates. And right, that was a big concern. Like, there is, when we collectively bargain on your behalf, we can do things where try to negotiate with Spotify by yourself to get a better royalty rate. It's not going to happen. So that was my second thought, that I hope that their intentions aren't nefarious. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, but that is a byproduct of that. You will have no bargaining power, and artists in general will lose the leverage as a whole. Right now, CD Baby, we have 10 million tracks. That's a lot of music. That gives us leverage on your behalf to make things happen.
Another thing that came to my mind was simple laziness. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. I mean, like, when I put out a new song, I upload it to CD Baby, and CD Baby sends it to 5 billion outlets around the world. Not literally, but, you know, 150 or something like that. And then I have to take this other step of going to SoundCloud and uploading the album art and the audio and putting in the description. And then I have to go to Bandcamp and blah, 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 blah. And those are the two, like, extra steps I'll take. But I don't want to have to start doing that for now. I got to add Spotify. Then I got to, whoever else does this. Like, I love the fact, and you know, this may sound like a commercial for CD Baby, but it's the case for any distributor. I love the fact that I have one place to park my music, and then they deal with it all.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we saw in the past, where I know when Google Play opened up direct submissions, this is quite a few years ago, all these headlines were the end of independent distributors because you can go direct with Google Play, and artists were like, but I don't want to just manage this one off with there when I can manage it all in one place. So there's that. The other thing that somebody here mentioned was that opening it up, like if they do open this up to anybody, anybody can go there and do it for free, which seems like they're taking on a lot of costs for little reward, that it could turn the platform into feeling almost like just a social network, in the sense that there'll be all this junk that's on there, and really dilute it feeling like a quality music service. And that could be an unexpected byproduct that they haven't, may or may not have thought of yet. It could feel more like SoundCloud, where there's just a bunch of random lower quality tracks throughout the entire platform that ruin the experience. And I could see that. I could see that being the case.
Well, you know, a lot of people kind of already make that argument now. Oh, distribution's so easy. It's so easy to record. It's so easy, you know, whatever. The ease of all this stuff is flooding everything with all kinds of crap anyways. So I don't agree with that. I'm just saying that's a very sort of cynical attitude that a lot of people have these days.
Yeah. So that wasn't my thought. That was a commentary that someone else made. And I was like, that was an interesting look at it, in that there's a certain bar that you expect from a music service as a fan. And if the experience becomes jumbled with a bunch of, you know, random demos and just half-hearted recorded stuff that people, since they can just throw it up there, they do, which you see on SoundCloud, that it might change how fans feel about the platform. So that was another thought. Another thought was that, you know, there was some headlines that basically saying, I'm just going to leave all the distributors behind and just upload to Spotify. And the funny thing about that viewpoint is that for years, when Apple was so dominant with the iTunes store and nobody else really mattered, as far as like most of your sales in the digital space were coming from iTunes, everything else paled in comparison. The overall theme that people were, you know, discussing over and over again was like, we got to get away from a single platform ecosystem because Apple has too much power. Apple has too much power. It's important that there's competition between multiple music services that have good products that people want and service different sections of the market, because one company having all the power is not a good scenario, because in the end, when it comes down to it, the fan, the subscriber to the music service, is who they're going to cater to. And the artist will take second place in that scenario always, because if that service has all the power, they're going to cater to the people that are paying the bills. And that's the subscribers, and it's not the artist. And that's not a good scenario to be in. So the competition of multiple services and platforms being important and having your music there, that plays into it.
You know, like, that degree of exclusivity with one platform that you really love and you're going to throw everything into, it's just kind of, well, it's not kind of, it's very dumb. I mean, like you already said, Apple Music's growing 2.5 times the rate in the US of Spotify, and every single one of those Apple Music subscribers is paying, unlike with Spotify. And it's ignoring the global marketplace because there's streaming services most people probably never heard of in China and whatever. It's like, why are you going to throw all your eggs in Spotify's basket? And I know over the past 2 years, we've really been kind of appreciative of the way that Spotify works and saying lots of nice things about them because they do what they do really well. But that doesn't mean you just ignore everything else.
Yeah, I think what I would definitely say is Spotify has proven that streaming brought a fundamental shift in how people can and will engage with music. And they've patterned that out in some really great ways. And they've given artists some access to merchandise and their profile and get access to data. Those things aren't, totally proprietary. Like anyone can create a playlist ecosystem on their platform. So I think you'll start seeing all the other platforms starting to follow suit as far as playlisting and user generated playlists and algorithmically generated playlists and that really push music forward. So
I can't believe anyone's actually seriously considering removing themselves from everything else and just going with Spotify, because just to cite the most glaring example, like MySpace, people put all their eggs in that basket. And now where is it now? Like, just a bad move.
So I need to finally let go of my MySpace page.
I bet you don't even remember your password.
I don't. Yeah.
Tom will remember.
Yeah, I'll find just Tom. Email Tom. Yeah.
He's on Instagram sharing travel pictures now.
People on Twitter were saying some crazy things, which people do on Twitter. They say crazy things. No. You may have seen our president say a few crazy things, but we will not discuss that here. I think those are all our thoughts on the matter. If you'd like to weigh in, you can do so. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And that'll conclude this portion of the show. And what you're about to hear is the theme. You'll hear some crowd noise. You're going to hear the theme music again. Actually, I start talking to the crowd first. So that's what you're going to hear first. And this will be the live taping of Successful Release Strategies in the Streaming World from the 2018 DIY Musician Conference that magically morphs it back to Chris and I here in the home office. So enjoy. Hey there, how you doing?
Hello.
Wow. You know, my name's Kevin, I should say that. This is Chris. This is the live taping of the DIY Musician podcast, and my voice is in perfect shape for it. But, you know, how many of you listen to the podcast? You know, we debated whether or not to move it into this room because it was so tight last year, but We like to feel a little more homey on this one. So if you want to move up closer, we can barely see anyone past the 10th row anyway. It's like family. It's like the podcast family. So feel free to move up. But it wouldn't be a DIY musician podcast without some theme music. So while people are still walking in, here we go.
You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician podcast. All right,
how's everyone doing? We are live at the 2018 DIY Musician Conference. My name's Kevin Bruner. This is Chris Robley.
Hey. I feel a little lame. I was just really enjoying my own song there.
You know, actually, that's something I've been wanting to talk about on the podcast. Why do artists get guilted over enjoying their own music? They created it. Can't we like it? I made it so I could listen to it.
No, I made it so others could listen to it.
Ah, well, that's just the added benefit.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you are not familiar with the DIY Musician podcast, you should check it out. It's in all the places where you get podcasts. And, you know, every time we do these at a conference, it's always good when there's the active diehard listeners in the crowd, because sometimes we tell jokes that only that refer to past episodes, and sometimes they don't land. In Spain, we got a lot of blank stares.
Yeah. It's just because they weren't funny. It wasn't lack of reference points, but
I refuse to agree with that. Anyway, we're so happy you're here. It's been an amazing weekend so far. You guys having a good time? Yeah. So before we get into the topic at hand, you know, Chris and I just can't resist chit-chatting about stuff anyway. But we were cleaning out the CD Baby warehouse, and let me get this here. We found some old CD Baby podcast t-shirts we had made probably back in 2007, 2008. Still in prime
they
condition.
They smelled brand new, though.
Actually, I was trying to figure out what that smell is. It doesn't smell bad. It's just I'm trying to figure out where this was in the warehouse that came out smelling like this. Anyway, we were trying to think of a couple trivia questions because we've got two. We've got a large and an extra large. I mean, this is it. This is like a limited edition. So we came up with a couple questions. What were they?
So and is it first person that shouts it out?
Well, yeah, first person to shout out the answer.
So you have to be on the honor system, I guess, if there's lots of noise. What was the name? What was the first name of our other co-host?
The Bolt. What was his first name he used on the podcast? This goes way back in the day. No. Oh, man. Now they're just guessing. All right. Whoever gets that one gets extra bonus points. I'm surprised no one knows that one. We made references to it many times.
That's his real name.
New question. At one point, we had a female co-host. What was her name?
Wow. We're going to have to dive into like world history or 90s rock music.
I guess we get these, Chris. Yeah. Wow, we thought we came up with some other questions and we thought they'd be too easy, so we went deep.
Yeah.
And wow. I don't have any other questions, so I don't know how to give them away.
We'll just think about it for the hour.
Yeah, someone Google it, and you can come up afterwards. That's what it was, wasn't it? Was it Robert?
Well, it was, but he had a name before that.
That's
but
true.
You know, maybe that's close enough.
Yeah, that's close enough.
That's like Price is Right kind of.
Yeah, that's rules. Right. Do you want the large or the extra large? All right, there you go.
I'm pretty sure his real name's Chris, but he started off with Charles, right?
Yes.
And then he became Robert, and then he became the Bolt.
Episode one, right before I hit record to start it, when we knew absolutely nothing about what we were doing in podcasting at the time, he decided, no, wait, call me Charles. And so the whole episode, I felt like an idiot calling him Charles because I had known him as Charles for all of 30 seconds before then. All right. How you doing, Chris?
I'm good. I did something I've never done in Nashville before, and that is last night I went to bed before midnight.
Wow. I didn't know they let you do that.
Yeah. And I also, the previous night, went to a bar and didn't get carded, and I was a little upset. And he was like, well, it's your gray beard. I was like, all right.
I guess
tomorrow night I have to go to bed early then.
I thought in Nashville they had to card everybody regardless. So. That's why you look so good, because you went to bed early. Apparently, I look like garbage today because everyone has been coming up to me saying, wow, you must have stayed out really late. I'm like, is it that bad?
Oh, you sound like garbage too.
Well, this morning I couldn't talk at all, but anyway, we're happy to be here. It's been a great journey to get to this conference and get this event going. We today are going to be discussing successful release strategies in a streaming world. And Before we really dive into the strategy part of it, we really wanted to provide context and set the stage for what we're even, you know, where we've been and where we're going as artists and distributing music. Because a lot of the way artists are approaching the market is still based on places that the industry has been and not even where it's at or going. So actually cut out the whole section about whether or not people, I should pull the room. So we're talking about streaming strategies. And when I've spoken on this before, I've asked the audience, how many of you are like super excited about streaming? And you can be honest, we're among friends and family here. How many of you are indifferent, like, I'm not sure about this thing, all right? And how many of you are just pissed off because of streaming and you wish it was? All right, we got a few of those. That's usually how it is. All right, so the old school strategy, this is what we did back in the day. You got a record deal, you got a song on the radio, people went to the store to buy. And that's what people did, and that's how the industry worked.
And on the first point, you got a record deal. That's asking a lot right there for step one. So most people never even got any of these following opportunities.
Right. I think they hand them out on the street corners here in Nashville, though. Then after that, you know, thanks to things like the rise of CD Baby, we moved into a direct-to-fan download era.
Yeah, so this is sort of the beginning of CD Baby through the introduction of iTunes, late 90s through, you know, maybe 2009-ish, where it was about ownership still primarily, and you having a way to get people to convince people to find and purchase your music.
Yeah, so you still, even like in the direct-to-fan era, it was like you were still having to, you know, you're building relationships with fans, you didn't need a label anymore, but you still were directing them to go take action, to go buy something. It was, you know, a big commitment. And so this next section that we're going to talk a little bit, about before we get into the strategy portion is, you know, I don't want you to miss, it, you know, some of it's going to be review for some of you, but I think it really sets the stage for the strategy portion coming up, in that the streaming era brought a complete fundamental shift in how fans engage with music. And this is one thing that I think a lot of people, especially those that are indifferent and are angry about streaming, is it's not a matter of, hey, people are streaming something as opposed to buying something. That may be true, but there's been a fundamental shift in how people engage with music. And if you're missing that point, you're approaching the marketplace all wrong. So some of the key points. Chris, you want to hit on some of those?
Sure. So now with streaming, there's such a low to almost zero barrier to entry for a listener to take a chance on checking out your stuff. So there's all kinds of different ways they can find your music, or you can still direct them to your music, of course, but they're getting it on their smartphones. They're maybe finding it in a mood-based playlist or, YouTube search sequences, there's keyword searches. What else we got on here?
Finding songs by lyrics, yeah. On platform recommendations and radio. When someone bought a download, when that album ended, things just ended. But all the streaming platforms, they start slotting in more music by other artists that they think you'll like. I think one of the things that's really just starting to take shape and still to be determined how it's incorporated into our lives in the future is people talking to devices and how they ask for music. That's something we've never had to do before. Apparently, some people with their kids have quite a lot of fun with this.
I do, yeah, yeah.
Was it you that was talking?
Alexa, oh. Yeah, we were messing with Alexa. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, so listening by mood or activity, that's a lot of ways people are, they're looking for music based on how they're feeling, what they're gonna do, and so it's really changed how the fan on the side of the equation is approaching the music they listen to.
And also, you have collaborations on there. I feel like there's this other thing of this kind of genome of collaborations that, you know, on Spotify, you collaborate and suddenly that music's showing up on both artists' profiles, and you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff out there now that the connectivity of information means is so many more pathways to your songs, and you can even use that sort of proactively, do a collaboration with the intent of reaching that artist's audience, you know, beyond just having a cool creative experience.
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting things about where streaming is going that definitely plays into strategic opportunities for you as an artist is when you start collaborating with people, your music shows up on your profile, and if it's a collaboration, it also shows up on their profile. And it's just a cool way to see everything an artist has done, and it's a new way for people to find new music based on artists they're already listening to. So another thing, another key point is that streaming is driving more plays. Things like Discover Weekly, Release Radar, they're all pushing more music. We've seen that just across the board with our catalog at CD Baby. I've seen it in my own music, and Chris has seen it as well. Just these things that the platform, they're doing that they don't have to, but it's actually driving more plays and getting our music in more people's ears.
Well, and just as a listener, like Spotify helped me rediscover my love of listening to new music. And it's, you know, in a given day, I'm probably listening to 2 or 3 hours more music than I was prior to subscribing. So,
yeah. Artists can merchandise their Spotify profile. That's really unheard of. In the history of the music business, an artist being able to set up shop where fans are going, like the main place artists or fans are engaging with music. I mean, think about back in the day of Tower Records. It's not like an artist could go set up, like make their little spot on the shelf all nice and neat, maybe add a few little extra decorations. Just unheard of. But now your fans are not only able to find more stuff easily, but you're able to actually feature things that it makes a difference on how the platform, decides what music to push for you.
It kind of leads to the next slide, too, is Tower Records was never going to let you walk into their store the same day and let you know who bought your CD or what they were like and how old they were and all this stuff, and now you have almost instantaneous access to that kind of information.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that's in the streaming world. We have so much data, real-time data, that really, if you have access to so much data, even just in your CD Baby account from Apple Music, iTunes, and Spotify, that you really should be looking at and kind of going over and interpreting it to, what does this mean? What songs are performing where and why? And those things help really form strategic opportunities for you as you plan your releases. The next one is that a lot of these platforms have very unique audiences, and I noticed I'm wearing the same shirt as I am in the picture, because I really only have like 3 shirts anyway.
Maybe you should keep this one.
You know, when I was on the road all the time, it got to the point where I really had like 1 outfit and a backpack, and I was fine with it. It's like, why do I need anything else?
Because your bandmates were not fine with it.
They didn't care. I was the least of the hygiene problems.
On your point of platforms having different audiences, that also means that different songs will perform differently on different platforms.
Yes, which is the point of this slide before I started talking about clothing and other things. We have a couple Christmas albums out, and one of our tracks is an a cappella song. It's not what the band does, but it's something we did on a Christmas album. And I logged into, you know, the amp tools at Pandora and saw that, man, this song is streaming like crazy. Between Thanksgiving and Christmas Day, we were getting like 400,000 streams. And last Christmas, it crossed 1 million. And it has no activity like this on Spotify or Apple Music. So it's very important that you understand that certain songs may be performing very well on different platforms because it's different listener experiences. It may be different audiences. I have theories about our audience on Pandora compared to other platforms, but that was just something that was a total surprise. And the great thing about Christmas music is it's the gift that gives every year. And so I'd expect again that this Christmas, it'll have another big spike, especially this year, because if you listen to the podcast, you've heard me say that this year is the best year in a long time to release Christmas music because it's the longest period between Thanksgiving and Christmas Day that it can possibly be. So you have like an extra week and a half to promote that Christmas music. And
you need to start a whole separate podcast about Christmas music strategy.
The wounds are a little too fresh at this point because we released our last Christmas album on the shortest time you could have, and it was a literal 4 weeks from Thanksgiving Day to Christmas, and I was like, why did it go by so fast? And I realized, oh, Thanksgiving's different every year. Who knew? And it plays into your release strategy. Anyway, moving along. Release dates no longer matter. This is one of my favorite things about what the streaming world has done. I put Craig Cardiff on there, and if you look that song up now, it probably has like 70 million streams because this slide's like 6 months old. But this song for Craig was released in 2007, and I don't even think Spotify was even available in the U.S. at that time. And it found an enormous audience on Spotify years later just by being added into a big playlist. So it's really something that you have to be thinking about your catalog and that all your music out there has opportunity. No one's going, listening down to a Spotify playlist and going, oh, this blows, this track's from 2007. How did that get in here? It's like it fits, they like it, it's good, it doesn't matter. And that's one of the great things that you can use to your advantage with advancing your whole catalog.
Yeah, and you might be sick of hearing me say this too, but almost the entire world has probably never heard your song. So you're new to the entirety of human population, which is an incredible opportunity. Again, no one cares if something came out in 2007 or 1968, as long as it's good and it hits them at the right time. And you have, you know, unprecedented access to tools that'll get that music in front of people. And I think we as artists put the pressure on ourselves to always be creating something new, and then we get sick of the old thing, so we forget about it. But you really can, if you dig into your whole catalog, find a use for every single song and find a way to reach its listeners.
Yeah. So over the years, we've really been trained as artists that everything is about the release day. And for a while, it was. When you're trying to put product on shelves, I mean, that's why the release day, it's still important to labels to coordinate all their marketing, but back in the day when they had to have CDs there, they had to know they were shipped, they had to know everyone was ready, then they had to know the shelf space was going to be there, then they put it out on the shelf and all the marketing lands on the same day, and it was all about the release day. And even as independent artists for years, we've created this thing like, this is the pinnacle of the release day, I've got the release day show, and we're going to point everything towards that. And I was playing bass for a friend, which is funny enough as it is, because I'm not a bass player, and for his release show. And after the show, he was like, well, now what? Because like, that was like it. I'm like, what do I do now? Because we've been trained that the most important thing is that release day.
And knowing him, the answer was probably get into the studio and work on another album for 2 years and
probably
do
so.
Anything to promote the one that had just come out.
Exactly. So, well, I want you to start thinking about and how you start looking at your releases. Instead of it being like all about this magical release day where everything comes together and we launch this album, is that you start looking at it more as a release season, that you as an artist are going into a season of release and you're going to be releasing music and planning that out in a more strategic way.
Although it's strategic, you're in a way freed of setting this arbitrary release date and then having to like panic your way towards that. With this kind of mindset, you can work on the art, make sure it's ready, and then kind of plan backwards. Is that the right term? But kind of then get it out into the world.
Yeah, sort of reverse engineer. So some of these big things like the circles, they do represent something. That's why some are bigger and smaller. And it's probably way too late to mention to the people listening to it on the podcast that I'm showing slides, and so they're probably going, I have no idea what he's talking about. So that, you know, the first section, and we're going to break these down in a minute, but it's like you're in the studio, you're in a season, you're in the creative phase, maybe not even in the creative phase, but the production phase, because maybe you've written all the songs, but you've done a lot of pre-production, you're just in the studio, and you need to focus on that. And so many artists have blown the release, you know, the chance of getting a splash out of the release because what Chris was saying, that they schedule some arbitrary release date, and that becomes the goal, as opposed to making a great album. And I've done it myself multiple times, even though I've said I'm not going to. And we've talked to artists all the time at CD Baby that have done the same thing, where they create this arbitrary future date where they want it out by. And it's good to have a goal. You don't want to be working on an album for 10 years. But they start letting that dictate their creative choices. Well, I'm not going to have time to hit that release date if we get the music right. And it's like, well, then what's the point? So really focusing on that music production point, and also thinking strategically, what content is going on right now in the creation process that I can get video of, that we can get photos of, that I'm going to hold on to and set aside to use strategically when I enter the next phase.
I think that's important too, because we're excited to be in the studio or whatever with our band making music, and we want to capture it and then immediately put it on Instagram, and like a little of that is great, but hold on to the real good stuff until the music is ready to come out, because you could just, you know, the well could be dry in terms of content to share with your existing audience. Any good content you can always share to new people, of course, so
yeah,
that's not an issue. But
yeah, and then you're gonna go into the like the release setup thing, and this is like, yeah, you're wrapping the production up now, you kind of know where the release date is, and you're gonna set it up with a few things, and we're gonna list those out in a bit. Then you're kind of got your big official release day, and you know, we're still talking, you know, like albums here, that you're setting up an album release, and that's, there's going to be some specific things you're going to be doing around that. And I actually wouldn't even call it like a release day. I would call it like a release window, because it's not just about that one day. It's about those initial weeks where it's like, this thing is now available.
And if we back up a second, we said release dates don't matter anymore. That is true in terms of the viability of your music as, you know, something that can reach an audience. But it is still something that, in a way, is almost more important when you're finally ready to release something, that you pay attention to the various opportunities that, like pre-saves and you know, a whole bunch of promotional stuff that you can do, but it's dependent on you setting the release date and giving yourself enough time to work towards
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah, that, yes. Release dates don't matter in the sense of the longevity of your music.
Yeah, don't just finish the album and then willy-nilly put it out. You still
yes.
got to do planning at that point.
Yeah, that's one of the worst habits we see happen that just destroy any strategic and promotional opportunities for artists with the release of their music, is that they finish it on Monday, have had that arbitrary release show set for months for that Friday, and call us freaking out trying to make sure it's worldwide before then. And we can do that, but what's the point? You're just blowing a lot of opportunity for your music. That's not how you launch a successful album. So after the official release, then you're going to get into a follow-up content kind of phase. And we're going to break all these down in just a second. So that really makes up what, you know, I'm calling a release season. And that follow-up phase is where my band is at now, where we've did the production, the setup with some things, the official release, and then instead of going into the now what, we have strategically things that we're working on to continue telling the story. So let's break these down a little bit. So starting off, we said finish the music first. Someone laughed. There should be tears of past agony and pain. And When you're thinking about this, this is like, okay, I'm producing the album. What are the things I'm going to need that are happening now or that I will need in the future when I start going into the like the promotion phase? So getting art made and thinking about, hey, if I want to get some singles. Maybe I should get some singles. You got to have an image for those singles. Maybe I should have that same artist do something that is relative to the album art, and just kind of thinking ahead of what you might need in that era while you've got someone working on it.
I also think, in terms of thinking ahead towards the release, talk to your bandmates or producer or friend or mom or whatever. Talk this stuff out loud, because you might stumble on a need that needs to be... I'll give you an example. I was talking to a friend yesterday who has an album that she wants to put out in June, and she's doing it at that time because the music is kind of summery and it's about people, you know, playing music together, so it's going to kind of be like evocative of the front porch jam. And but the music's not going to be finished recording until, I don't know, like February or something. I'm like, well, take those pictures now, because when it's February or March or April and you need the pictures, it could be 9 feet of snow on the ground. So, you know, although the release is far away, get the pictures that are supposed to be summery right now. So anyways, that's one example of, like, don't miss those kinds of opportunities just because you haven't sort of talked it through with other folks in your life.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff you want to start thinking about strategically. When we were doing our band photos, we were in Florida, and it was 1,000 degrees outside and 1,000,000 humidity, whatever. And we were, I made sure we were wearing some long sleeve shirts because we didn't want to look like we were about to go to the beach. Because when the album came out, I didn't know when it would come out. And if it was coming out in December, we don't want to look like it's summertime, you know. So those are some of the things you want to talk through, like you mentioned. So don't focus on release dates. Mining the data for opportunity. This is probably one of the biggest things that artists aren't doing. And what I mean is, like, looking, especially if you have a big catalog, that's, there might be things happening with your music in this new streaming era that you wouldn't have noticed before, like specific playlists that have been using your tracks. Like, oh, this playlist has been adding a lot of our music. I will let that person know that I've got a new single coming out. Maybe they'll, if we talk to them ahead of time, maybe they'll feature it, and maybe we can work out some sort of, not really exclusive deal because you can't control it, but maybe some sort of thing where we feature their playlist and they feel excited because they got to add it first and talk about it, you know. Some of those things where you're just looking at the data, maybe certain areas you've been performing better, certain cities where you start thinking about touring, this is a good time to do it because you're kind of in that downtime. And looking for other successes, what's worked in the past that you can capitalize on and keep doing. So that Pandora song that I mentioned, that was one of those opportunities where I looked at the data. I'm like, oh my gosh, this song's doing really well. I had this live video of us that was HD, perfect audio quality of us doing that a cappella song live, and I just had it sitting there. So I threw it up on Facebook, and it was the closest thing we've had to a viral video. We got like 50,000 views in a couple days and like 900 shares. And it was just like, oh, there was some opportunity sitting there. I just wasn't paying attention. When I did, I didn't have to do any work for it. I just had a video already and just stuck it online, and it would have been something I would have never picked otherwise. So those are the kind of things you want to look for and start thinking, where are the real strategic opportunities for my music?
And I know this is like the least exciting thing to tell sensitive artists, but try to make a habit of looking at that data every day, even if it's just 3 minutes. Like, look at Pandora, look at Spotify, look at, you know, your trending reports in CD Baby, any of that. Just quick glance. It doesn't have to be like being a scientist about it.
Yeah, and lots of photos and video, and don't feel like you have to post all this stuff or know what you're going to do with it right now, because some of this, the things that may happen with your music may be different than you expect, the songs people grab onto. And so just having lots of videos and photos, and, you know, I think this is a good time to document some of your thoughts about the creation process, because a lot of it, times you'll be like, oh, I'll remember this later, and then you forget it, and or you're not in the moment, and so it doesn't come out the same. So even writing down some thoughts and of just, you know, how you're feeling in the moment, because fans love that stuff. So after that, we're done with the music. And this is where that setting up the release phase comes in. And the best, you know, one of the key things is having one or two singles from the album that you get out there ahead of time for a couple reasons, but yeah, you can go down some of the lists.
Of all the opportunities
some of the things. Yeah.
So, on this first point, or you just want to go through these things?
Okay.
So, one thing I saw Cheryl say in her email talk yesterday is that it's your job to tell your fans how to be great fans. So, number one is just ask your fans to do something specific for your music, whether it's adding a single to their playlists or, you know, following you on Spotify or whatever the goal is. You gotta clearly communicate that message, why they'll be helping you, why it's important. In terms of that first one, select the future release date and work backwards. We've got pre-saves. We could talk about this direct submission to Spotify playlists now. I've written blog articles about all these things if you have specific questions about those opportunities. Then making lyric videos and music videos. And one thing I would say is that we tend to stress about getting really high budget, you know, beautiful looking music videos. And those tend to not perform as well on social platforms like Facebook as much as a video that feels more intimate, casual, like an iPhone video, mainly because that's the type of content people are used to seeing in their feed and it feels like they're not being advertised to. Or if there's a big high budget video, it's like, oh, well, someone's sponsoring this, and then they're confirmed that they're being sold to in a way. So anyways, I say that to don't stress about it being, costing you $10,000 to make a video. Just come up with a good idea and shoot it on your iPhone.
Yeah, so what you're doing in this phase is you're really trying to prime the pump for the actual release day. And a lot of these, most of these platforms have, or all of them do, they've got these algorithms that are working in the background. And if you don't know what an algorithm is, it's just computers trying to figure out what people want to hear. That's all it is. And so what you're doing is like you want to take your diehard fans and you want to get them, you know, like Chris was saying, a lot of your fans may not realize, oh, it's advantageous for me to follow you on Spotify. Okay, I'll click that follow button. And, oh, you got this new single out. I'll share it and save it to my Spotify playlist. And so you've got these little singles and things coming up, and your single might be huge, depending on your fan base. But also what you're trying to do, if you're, you know, still building an audience, is you're trying to let the Spotify algorithm know that there's activity happening here. There's momentum with this artist. There's things happening. So when that big release comes out, you've got all these the Spotify system being primed to feature it to them in their Discover Weeklies, their release radars, and for playlist potential, it really helps. So that's what you're trying to do, and I think, yeah, like if you're during this time, this is where, yeah, just put up your phone one night and do an acoustic version of every song on the album. Now you've got 10 videos ready to roll on social media that will perform really well, and you can link to the album, and people will love them. And it'll take you an evening to do that.
And I like the one you have, make a content list. I think that's really important. You with content, that's photos, it's videos, it's could be alternate mixes, it could be demos, essays you've written. There's a whole, you know, content's a vast thing. And if you have a good piece of content, let's say it's an interesting photo of some moment in the studio, that's not just one piece of content, because there might be 10 different angles that you could use to caption it or write a story that accompanies it. So, think of as many ways as you can get into that content and give people the opportunity to access that particular photo or whatever from multiple points.
Yeah, and, you know, you can get pretty nerdy with making a content list, and it could be spreadsheets with links and all sorts of stuff, but really just knowing what it is just trying to group together the good moments that you think will work. Like if you've had, you know, cameras rolling and people taking video while you're in the creation process, you could have hours and hours and hours of video. At some point, you're going to have to go through and find those good moments that are going to work for promotion. And so that's really what that is. You know, you need to go back through that and go, oh, this is really good. I can use this piece and that piece. And so you want to make sure you're not forgetting some gold stuff that you've got sitting there that would just be great on social media, and forget about it. So that's what you're kind of going to do there. So Then we're going to move on to the full album release. And this is when you're going to start, you know, really the big, this is like the climax. You're going to start dumping out a lot of that content, you know, having a good lyric video for whatever songs you're pushing, having, you know, the official music video. It's always good to release it around this time. This, you know, the release show around this time. You know, this is when you really start telling the story of the album. And one thing I'd highlight is that you want to set up the release, I think, why singles are good, and a few story pieces, but singles especially because you're using the music, but you don't want to give away the whole story and, you know, have the, you know, the final climax of the story happen before the full album experience is out that, so out there. So you really want to, you know, this is when all your press should be landing and really just, it's like, it's out and there's lots going on for fans to engage with. It's not just about listening to the music. They're hearing stories, they're seeing videos, and it's just more of an experience of the release and not just there's new music available.
Yeah. And then I think it's the perfect time to reach back into that brainstorming session you hopefully had at an earlier point where you realize that every bit of content you have around this and every song has three or four or five different angles into it. So, you know, you could go on, do Facebook Live or YouTube Live premieres of the recordings. You could go and perform each of the songs. You could do Facebook Live every single day for 2 weeks where each day focuses on a different track. You know, any kind of way into this content, you should make that list of it. And this is the time to really start dishing that out. And then you did a Twitter listening party, right?
Yeah, we did a Twitter listening party. It wasn't with a release. It was with an anniversary of a release, but that was actually something that was really great as well because it gave it a lot of visibility. We had people using a hashtag. We, you know, set a time where we were going to play the album. So, you know, they could open up Spotify or hit play on their CD player and it would all be playing down at the same time. And we were posting just behind the scenes info, videos, photos, fun facts, and people were retweeting and linking to stuff, and it actually broadened exposure. So yeah, those are all the kind of things that you want to do around this time with the full album release. And you don't want to let it all go before the album is fully available. And that, I think, is a challenge. Like you're collecting all these story pieces, like when you're in the studio and then you've got singles rolling out and it's real easy to just want to go, here's everything. But you got to really save a lot of the content for this point because it's like you're building and building and now there's this new music and now these even bigger and deeper stories open up and there's more content and it should feel more like this is the party. It's finally started. Yeah. We've been hearing about it and now it's happening.
Well, and I think an important sort of mental frame of mind to be in is to treat every time you create a post or you're trying to get this stuff out there like folks have never heard it, because I think what happens is we share things a few times and then we feel like, oh, we're like badgering our fans with the same thing now. But that's why it's important. Again, if you, let's say you're sharing the single, there might be a story about how you wrote the lyrics over the course of 5 years. There might be a story about what the lyrics are about. There might be a story about how fun it was to sing the harmonies with your band. And then maybe another one about how the synthesizer broke midway through and that actually led to a really cool sound. Or, you know, there's so many different ways to share that same thing. Don't worry about everyone getting sick of you. You're probably sick of you and that makes sense. But, but just remember this stuff you're sharing is new to everyone else.
No, I like your mention of like the synthesizer breaking, because I think oftentimes when we're thinking about the story of the album and some of the storylines, it's like, artists tend to think too globally about the experience and too general and broad as opposed to very specific. There was a track on our latest album. It's track 10. We were in Ardent Studios in Memphis and they have a Mellotron there, which we found out was the first Mellotron in the US. We found out post recording session, but so we posted a bunch of videos of us wheeling this Mellotron in and then trying to get it to work. It sounded like someone torturing a cat most of the time. lots of noise, doesn't work. If you don't know what a Mellotron is, you could go to the Small Town Poets Instagram feed and you can find the videos. Very old keyboard that uses tapes for each key, a recorded tape for each sound that you hear, made famous by the Beatles. Anyway, so we're trying to get it working, and we got it working for, I think, 5 minutes, long enough for us to do one take of the chord progression. And so it's at the beginning and at the end of this, of track 10 on our album. And so it's even just getting into those little interesting nuggets of like, this is, you hear that sound and, you know, as a fan, you hear that sound and you probably don't think anything of it, but this is actually a fairly interesting story about what we had to do to get that and the keyboard we were using and the history behind it.
Oh, if you'd had a Nord Electro, one of the new Nord Electros, then the Mellotron would have been all over the song and you would have totally overdone it. So how lucky That's you are true. That the thing was broken. You That's just used true. It just right.
Then we were imagining all the people that probably had used that same Mellotron because like REM's done records there. And so we're just, you know.
Big Star, did they ever use Mellotron?
I don't know. But those are some of the stories that you can dive into that, you know, sometimes you're thinking, none of my fans care about this. Or when you're thinking about it, you're thinking too music promotion, like go buy, go do this, go take action, as opposed to, you know what, this is a funny thing that happened in the story, in the recording process, and or this sound came from here. So those are the kind of things that, you know, you want to make sure are rolling, because now people have the whole album, and part of the reason why you need to save a lot of the story elements is because now they also have context. Before, you know, if you start releasing too many photos and too many stories about the making of the album, they haven't heard the whole thing yet. So that Mellotron story, when, you know, they haven't heard track 10 yet, it doesn't land as well because they didn't have context. So those things are things to make sure you have all that rolling at this time. And, you know, this is when you're probably, you know, there's a release show or you're launching your tour, you're doing all those things, lots of activity. And a lot of it's activity that we've been familiar with this phase because we look at like the release day. And so we've kind of looked at this when the album coming out or the new music coming out being very important and key to launching a lot of those campaigns.
Yeah, I think this, we're talking about sort of collecting all this anecdotes and material and stuff, like we're building like a marketing asset folder or whatever. And I think that leads into the next thing, which is all the follow-up material you need for promoting things, not just in the week or two after the release, but for the next 6 months or the next year or whatever. And you're going to need a lot of other stuff as well to kind of keep that train rolling.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, where we're talking about looking at it more like a release season, as opposed to everything landing and focused on this one magical date when all the music's going to land and all the magic's going to happen. It's like, it's a matter of like thinking about all the ways you can keep the fans engaged and experiencing the music in new and different ways. I mean, this is where, you know, live tracks, live versions of the songs that they now have heard, sheet music and charts. We have a lot of artists, especially, you know, in like the piano player world but other genres as well, where after the album's out, they followed up with PDFs of the charts or, you know, the score where people can learn the music, and sometimes they're buying it at a decent price. Sometimes they're using it as a giveaway, but that's a way for your fans to experience it again for the first time. And now instead of just listening to it, they're engaged with the music by playing it themselves. And, it deepens their relationship to that song.
And we've talked about a lot of the things you can do while you're still in the studio towards the end of the creation process to kind of prepare for this follow-up phase. But, you know, burn some alternate mixes where you remove a lot of the stuff and kind of get a super stripped down version. Make sure you get stems of your mixes so that you can give those to remixers and get the whole remix thing going.
Yeah,
definitely like save some outtakes and the goofy stuff too.
Yeah, this is really where you can have a lot of fun experimenting because your fans have heard what you have deemed like the official release. Now you can just screw around with it and have fun. Let them have fun with it, do their versions of it, and you can screw around with it like, hey, I did this totally different version of this song. What do you think? You know, and put it out there. You mentioned alternate studio versions. I was talking to somebody recently who said that they typically do 60 different versions of a song to cater to different playlist types.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I don't even know how I would get past 10 different versions of a
60
song.
60 versions of one song?
Yeah. Yeah, that
well,
was
sure they're doing it because it's working for them, but that seems excessive.
So say you took one of your songs or one of Small Town Poet's songs, because it's, you know, at its core, a lot of the instrumentation is similar, electric guitars, acoustic guitars, you know, typical band type thing. Like doing a version where it's all acoustic, but the mix is made to sound mellow, so more mellow playlist, one where it's more rocking, one that's, I mean, it was just, I was just like, man, I can't even think of that. That would seem like a lot of work. Like,
yeah, it makes my brain hurt.
I don't have an extra $2,000 per mix to have somebody sit there and do that many versions, burn them down, and then have the mastering agent drop or mastering engineer drop that in. That's a lot.
Wow.
He may have been exaggerating.
Oh, I hope so. I'm thinking about like the mellow version of the song and the rockin' version. It's like, okay, this is my rock song. Wait 3 months and you'll get the mellow song, but that's going to be a different song. Like presenting the same song, and that's amazing. I'm actually envious, so I'm playing it off as a critique. Way to prepare yourself.
But that's something that people are considering now when they're mixing. It's like, hey, here's the official release, but I'm going to do some alternate versions. I think this is a good song that if there's an acoustic version, it might have another life on a playlist. It's not what I'm going to feature to my fans. Might be some alternate take that I throw out there at some point, but yeah, all the things to consider. But the idea being that it's like there's ways to go back and do new things with the music. It's not locked into what you put on a CD. So you can re-release some new versions and just have fans engage with it. This is also the kind of stuff that's great for running show.co campaigns. It's like, here, alternate versions, you know, follow us on Spotify and you'll get here the death metal version of our ballad, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. And exactly. Taking those kind of chances is totally fine because it's not your, you know, your precious album, which is presented as the form of art that you want. And then, but you can do all these other things. And Spotify knows that, you know, the album is primary in your discography and the other things will sort of fill in below it. So
yeah,
experiment away.
And this follow-up time period is also when you want to mine the data and see what was really working with the singles and the initial release. You know, sometimes it takes a few months to really compile data and see trends. You know, you'll see some spikes like the first week that the release comes out, but to see some like long-term trends, like songs that might be more popular than others, that actually is where we're at with our release. I've had the song, you know, we've had the album out for a couple months, and seeing some of the trends and the feedback on some of the songs, there's been some ones that I expected, but then there's been a couple that people have called out that I wouldn't have thought. And so it's like, huh, there might be an opportunity there. Actually, in a couple episodes ago, I was talking about a music supervisor I met at our conference, and he said that one of the songs he mentioned as being interested in and that potentially has some placement opportunities, I never would have sent him if I had, you know, it was just, I sent him the whole CD and I would have sent him 100 other songs before I sent him that particular song. So it's just, sometimes you're like, people hear things differently. So that's why it's good to look at the data and make sure you're not missing out on opportunity and some trends with your fans, because you're making assumptions and there might be some remix opportunities and whatnot, lots of things. So that's like the follow-up phase. So that kind of completes what we've put together. It's like the whole release season. And the thing that I like about where we're at in the music business is that it takes the pressure off of you being a salesperson. And we've spent so much time and energy going, go buy, go take this action. You must pull out money and spend money in order to hear my music. And we lack a lot of creativity with that messaging. But we're at a place where it shifts away from that to, I just need to find creative ways to keep fans listening and engaging. I just need to get them to push the play button. And when I think in those terms, it's so much easier to get creative with the music, creative with the messaging, because it's less about this financial barrier where they must make a key decision. Do I want to spend $10 or do I not want to spend $10? Instead, there's no, all they got to do is push the play button. If you can find creative ways to keep getting them to push the play button, you'll have more success. And I think that's where we're at in a streaming world and with what you can do with re-releasing and getting creative. It's just like, here's another reason for them to push the play button and enjoy our music.
Well, and you get to avoid the thing that we hate doing the most, which is seeming salesy, like you said. And when you're not concerned about desperately getting people to buy, then you, yeah, that creativity will lead to more authentic communication.
And that's really what I think this points to, especially from the album release on to all that follow-up material. It's just like, think about authentic ways people can get in the music and re-experience the music, or maybe hear a different version that you thought should have had the should have been the mix that was on the album, but you got outvoted by the rest of the band. That's what I think is exciting about where we're at.
Well, you have this slide here in the presentation that says it's all about the music, and that's so nice that, like, you know, I don't know if it's all about the music, but in this world, you can kind of focus it back on the music way more than I think you could have 15 years ago.
Yeah, as opposed to it being about the sale. It's like you're removing yourself from feeling like I have to go now sell this to everybody, as opposed to I have to go find a way to get people to engage with the music and create storylines about the music, do different versions of the music, do charts of the music. And that is exciting.
And all of that is like the dream anyways. Like when you're like 14 years old and thinking about all the cool stuff that'll happen when your music is out there, it's like, this is what you want. You want people remixing it. You want to be talking about it in interviews and coming up with all different angles to tell people how amazing and brilliant you are. Like, so this, you get to play out that kind of fantasy of there being all these permutations of ways of people accessing your music.
Exactly.
So go live your teenage dream.
I'm going to do that, Chris, right after
unless your
this
teenage dream is filthy, then
filthy or illegal.
Yeah.
Chris told me to do this on the podcast. I'm just, if you get arrested, it's not our fault. We didn't know you as unless you are a teenager right now. All right. I would love to hear people's thoughts about how they're releasing music, how some of the changes in the streaming world have impacted how they approach the market. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And we would love to hear from you. Chris, I think we masterfully salvaged that episode because...
Yeah, you know, the other thing that I realized is going to make it completely obvious is that you were pretty hoarse during the live recording, and now your voice is magically full.
Yeah, not as bad as the session we did on show.co. I was listening to that one, and I was sounding like Axl Rose during the Use Your Illusion tours where he could barely hold it together. That's what it was sounding like. If that makes it, I know that reference only makes sense to me. So anyway, yes, my voice magically healed halfway through that. All right, we have a phone call and an email, and we should get to that right now. Let's start with the phone call.
Hi, Kevin. It's Ishvan from Chicago. I've listened to your show forever. Love your show. And I just had a question. Not sure if you guys ever covered this or covered it recently, but about handling show dates. I use Bands in Town, which is okay. The main problem is just like with Spotify opening up, which is nice to artists, and Apple as well, trying to populate those places with show dates in an easier fashion. I believe Spotify uses Songpick, which I used when it first came out, but found it frustrating because, like a lot of musicians, I'll play in summer weather in the Midwest, and that's festival performances. So there is no traditional venue. And the way that they allow you to do that is through a drop-down menu, and they don't have many places there. So it was frustrating. So when I use Bands in Town app, I can do that on my Facebook music page, and it will populate to my Squarespace website. So I was just wondering if anyone had tips or suggestions or things that they were doing that allowed them to post a date maybe in one or two places and then it populating in as many places as possible. And also ones that they just enjoy. Bands in Town can be a little wonky and people can't get onto it unless they use their app. And so it can be frustrating in and of itself, even though it does some cool things. So keeping track of dates, it's a good, I guess, problem to have. But it can be really time-consuming and tedious and then confusing sometimes because dates change and all of that stuff. So, again, love your show. I've listened to it forever. It's super helpful and feels like a true community. It's really cool. I accosted you at one of the CD Baby conferences telling you that you were my Marc Maron, and you just kind of laughed. And it was really nice. I wish I had a longer time to talk to you there. But you guys are great. Thanks again. I'll be listening.
All right. Thank you for the call. I'm assuming that was a compliment when he said I'm his Marc Maron.
No, he basically meant you're just a super asshole.
That's, yeah. I've been called worse things. Do you have any tips? I have some thoughts, but you probably have more experience than I do.
I don't really, because I was going to say, I don't really tour anymore in that sense where I'm like, basically, I play the type of gigs where I'm either in the Northeast or I'm in Portland, Oregon, and then I lean on Facebook events to do most of the work. So I plead ignorance.
Oh, well, then I do have something to offer here. We have some shows coming up in October. By the time you hear this podcast, it might be October, but we have some shows coming up, and I was diving into this problem. And what he said at the beginning of the call, like opening up to artists, he's not talking about the direct submission thing we talked about at the beginning. He's talking about allowing artists to merchandise and put up tour dates on these platforms like Spotify and Apple Music. And it sounds like Apple Music uses Bands in Town. I know Spotify, for a fact, uses Songkick. And it is extremely frustrating. So I would love to hear if anyone's dialed it in somehow, figured out a rhythm or pattern. But it's frustrating because you go to Songkick and you can list your shows. But like he's saying, there has to be a venue a lot of times. You can add in some stuff if there is no venue. But the trouble I was having is that for a couple of the shows, we are opening for a band that has a really big following. At least Songkick said, I was not allowed to add that band to the bill because they have a giant following on song. They like the, it was funny the way it phrased it. It made it like they were in some exclusive club and I wasn't allowed. It was pretty funny.
You weren't allowed to like poach their fans or something?
I was not allowed to add them to the bill because their fan base was so large. And it was like, this artist is one of the largest artist on Songkick, you cannot add them. I just thought the phrasing was funny because they are not the one of the largest. It's, you know, they have a big following. But anyway, so they had made, that band had made the Songkick listing for the show that we're doing with them in Seattle, but the one in Portland hadn't been made yet. So I was trying to make that and it wouldn't let me. And so I couldn't get that show listed on our Spotify page. I could if I just listed it like it was ourselves, but we're opening for them. And I wouldn't want people to think that it's a headlining gig of ours when we're only going to be playing for like 30 minutes. So it is frustrating and quirky. I don't have as much experience with Bands in Town. If anyone has some tips on streamlining this or ways that you've mastered the workflow of updating concert information across these platforms, it would be helpful. Because, you know, the nice thing about Spotify is once it's listed on Songkick, it auto-populates to Spotify. And then you can go in your Spotify for Artists tool and you can feature that show on the top of your profile. So if you've got a special show, you can put that right up top right there. So people land on your profile will see it. That's great for like album release shows or just, a very special show that you want a large amount of people to know about. Maybe beyond just the region that can go to it.
I was just looking on Spotify for artists to confirm that it's only Songkick, and it looks like it is only Songkick. I thought Bands in Town worked with Spotify as well now, but
nope, just Songkick. All right, let's move on to the email. Here we go. This is from Eb. and that's E-B. I thought, did he mean to say Ed? But I'm assuming he knows how to spell his name because he said it multiple times. Kevin and Chris, I'm a singer-songwriter in Wichita Falls, Texas. I've played Wichita Falls before. I'm working on the release of my first solo album and have started production on my next. On both projects, I recorded songs written by friends that have not previously been recorded or registered in any way. I obviously want them to get all their due credit for the songs, but I'm not sure if that's something I can do or if they have to. I hope this question is clear. I'm a bit confused on how to move forward. By the way, I've been playing in bands since the late 90s, but took quite a few years off. The last decade, I woke to find myself in a digital age of music, completely bewildered until my friend tipped me off to your podcast a couple years ago. Thank you for this rich and up-to-date resource. All the best, Eb. I had a follow-up question for him before you jump in. Let me, because I've asked him if those songwriters were like in other bands, if they had registered or what the status was, just so I could make sure I gave him the right answer. So this was his response to that question. None of them are affiliated with any PROs or writing for anything else. They are just songwriters who play out some, but are not currently recording, releasing any music. And then he said, so if I understand you correctly, option one, if I used the Pro package, CD Baby Pro, which is a Pro Publishing Administration, it would let me register the songs independently. And in the rare chance that songs performed well, the earnings would be allocated appropriately for each song. Option two, I could upload the songs, just list the songwriters, and any earnings wouldn't be collected until one of us chose to for the song. And that would still be legal and on the up and up. Thanks again for helping me sort this out. I'll let you comment, Chris, and then I'll...
Well, I have two questions too. I might have missed them in when you're reading the initial email, but did he co-write them or he's just performing songs his friends have written?
I'm assuming he co-wrote, but I don't think it matters.
Okay. Well, the reason if it was a song that a friend wrote that had never been released before and they have granted this guy permission to put it out, then it's not technically a cover song.
No, it's not a cover song.
Yeah, if it's a co-write, then just go ahead, sign up for CD Baby Pro Publishing and we'll take care of it all.
Yeah. So the options really are, you know, if you want, when you sign it up and you do CD Baby Pro, you can either just handle the publishing administration for your portion of the song, or you can do it for all of you as writers. Now, if you do it for all of you as writers, you'll have to give a little bit more information so we can register them with a PRO. It may be more work than you want to do on their behalf. If you don't want to do that, you can just put in all the information about the song splits and just that we're just administering for your rights of that song and it will be fine. So, and you could do it where you don't do CD Baby Pro. You'll still have to put in the songwriter information. It would just look like, you know, you collaborated with some other people, you know, for all we know, they're in your band and you just wouldn't get those publishing royalties for you. So there's options. It hasn't been released before. They're not recording those same songs for themselves and their music projects. So it's pretty clean and easy.
Yeah.
And Eb added an interesting fact. I'm going to read his interesting fact now that we've answered his question. He said, years before my wife and I met each other, we both went to the same Jeff Moore Small Town Poets Out of Eden tour on the same night. While waiting in line for a payphone after the show, I met a guy who I ended up playing in a band with and touring for several years. So our paths have crossed.
Look at that. Small Town Poets is facilitating all kinds of community.
If I could go back and relive 1 year of my life, that year would be at the top of the list.
That was you at your prime?
Well, it was a big tour. We were playing sold out theaters and some small arenas. And it was the year our record was breaking. While we were on that tour, we got nominated for a Grammy. And that year we went from, you know, scrounging around trying to get gigs and to playing on this big tour. And we were the opening act, but they had to give us more time because so many of the people coming were coming to see us. And it was just, it was just an amazing thing to, you know, have dreamed about playing on these big stages and arena and to walk out on a stage and everyone's screaming and good times. Now I sit in an office all day long looking at computers.
But But you're in the music business, man.
Yes, I am. So,
hey, you know what, though? Lest that sound like a downer. You're still in that band, and you
That's
guys
true.
Still play gigs.
That's true.
And you have a tour. You have a tour coming
That's
up.
That's true. Because, you know, that was just nostalgia speaking, because there was a lot of things at the time where that were very stressful. That was also the same time where we were getting about 3 hours of sleep at night and having to go nonstop. It was the year I realized I had a deeper understanding of why you see all these celebrities end up on drugs, especially uppers, because it's like everyone expects you to be on all day long and be the best version of you. And it's a challenge. It's a challenge, but it was amazing. It was amazing. And yeah, we're still making music though. That's amazing too. Thanks, Eb. That's pretty funny that we've connected in spirit many years before. If you'd like to email us or call our listener line, you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or call our listener line at 360-524-2209. And we'd love to answer your question, hear your comments, weigh in on releasing music, or weigh in on the Spotify issue, or just say hi. That's good too.
Hey guys, hi.
Hi.
Click.
Yep. We get some interesting calls. There's been some, I think, people dialing a little too late, a little too drunk.
We should do an episode where we remove their, you know, announcing who they are and then just
make fun of them.
No, just have the whole episode be those calls, but with their names redacted.
You know what we should do?
No, we don't. No commentary from us.
You know what we should do? And I think we should do this. We'll do this in a future episode of the podcast. This is just for you podcast listeners. I will not do this anywhere else. But I still have a bunch of recordings from way back in the day of the early days of CD Baby when Chris and I were new. There was only four lines that came into the building.
Oh, yes.
And so we had voicemail, and people had a habit of calling drunk, stoned, just out of their mind, and leaving these crazy voice messages. And I have them. They're on my computer. I will. I saved some gems.
I've got them too. If you can't find them.
They're so.
Well, and the funny thing is, because back then, the idea of like CD order fulfillment for independent artists was unheard of. So people would see the phone number, which was 1-900-BUY-MY-CD, and they thought they were calling the artist.
Yes.
So a lot of them are like people talking as if they're talking to the artist, totally drunk out of their mind or whatever.
I remember one, this creepy one, I think I have it, where this girl thought she was calling the artist and just leaving a bunch of really awkward and inappropriate things on the voicemail, thinking she's talking to the artist, and made me feel uncomfortable listening to it, knowing she wasn't. Yeah,
I think I listened to those recordings so many times, I can hear them.
I know, same here.
Head.
I do too. So we'll have to break that out, but it'll just be between us and the podcast listeners. You won't hear me post them anywhere else because they don't have people's names on them, but they're pretty hilarious. So we'll do that on a future episode. And yeah, I think that officially brings us to the end, because that has to be the end. We'll catch you next time. See ya. You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.